Begin by thanking to the organizers for this opportunity to give a talk at Perelman Institute. And it always be nice to be here, and I have a fun to chat with people that are Perelmanters in usually. All right, so today I'm going to tell you something about some new exact results in Columbia compactifications, D-brains, and orientable planes. And this work based on those three papers, the joint work with the Perelman group like Nima and Jaume Bruno. And another paper by Pilchen Yi and Hyun Kim, who will come to Perelman Institute as a new postdoc from this September, I guess. So let me start. So for the last couple of years, we've seen a number of remarkable success in studying strongly coupled dynamics of various supersymmetric theories in various dimensions using some new exact observables, such as four-spin partition functions and three-spin partition functions, and superconformal indices developed by these people. So for instance, using this new exact result, we learned about Alde-Gayato-Tachikawa correspondence, which relate the four-spin partition function of the four-dimensional gate theory to the correlation function in the Liouville and Toda CFT. We also learned about the F theorem, which is a kind of three-dimensional counterpart of the Chomolodchikov cis theorems. And using those new exact results, we can do some precision tests of various conjecture dualities in supersymmetric theories and many other things. Therefore, it's quite natural to keep pursuing a similar inquiry in the two-dimensional theory, such as two-sphere partition functions and elliptic genus and disk partition function are arbitrary partition functions. And this is what I want to discuss today. And in particular, using those new exact results in two-dimensional theories, I will attack some basic but very important questions which still remain a challenge in two-dimensional theory in relation to the string compactification on the Calabria space especially. So let me first briefly review the basic things about the string compactifications. And today, I'm mainly focused on this type-based string theory compactified on the Calabria 3-manifold, whose low-energy effective theory can be described by this four-dimensional and equal to supersymmetric theories. We can also study the physics of this four-dimensional study from the worship point of view, which is given by this nonlinear sigma model, whose target space is the given Calabria manifold, which is the CFT, two-dimensional CFT. So on the geometric side, we have Keller and complex structure moduli, which will determine the size and the shape of the given Calabria manifold. And those moduli parameters will give us various massive scalar field in this four-dimensional theories. In particular, this Keller moduli will give us the massive scalar field in the vector mod flat. In the nonlinear sigma model point of view, the worship point of view, those moduli parameters can be understood as a marginal coupling of the two-dimensional 2.2 superconformal theories. For many purposes, it's the precise kinetic terms and a potential term in this four-dimensional theories, which includes all kinds of non-perturbative quantum corrections. In the geometric side, this means we have to know the alpha prime corrections to the metric on those moduli space. In the two-dimensional CFT metric, it's nothing but the Chomolodchikov metric, and we need to compute all kinds of Wershed instanton corrections, which is a very, very difficult problem in the past. And the mirror symmetry has provided a beautiful solution to this problem, computing this Wershed instanton correction to the metric on this marginal coupling, space of the marginal coupling of this two-dimensional CFT for some limited examples, which I want to discuss later in this talk. We also would like to introduce the D-brains and orientable planes in this Calabria space and want to study their effect in the four-dimensional physics. And we can also study this four-dimensional effect from this nonlinear sigma model by looking at these boundaries and by studying the boundary state or cross-cap state in this two-dimensional theories. In early 90s, Witten has proposed a very nice weakly coupled UB descriptions for this nonlinear sigma model on the Calabria space, which is the two-dimensional supersymmetric gate theories. And this gate theory is called the gate linear sigma models. So in this gate linear sigma model approach, the Keller moduli of the Calabian manifold can be identified as a complex finite FI parameters, where a tau, where this C is the FI parameters, and theta is the two-dimensional theta angles, while the complex structure moduli of the given Calabian manifold can be realized as the parameters, complex parameters in the superpotential. And one nice thing about this GLSM is that it allows us to understand how this nonlinear sigma model on Calabian manifold in the large volume limit can be smoothly connected to the Landau-Ginzburg theories. Anyway, so using this gate linear sigma model and the supersymmetric localization technique, recently people made remarkable progresses in understanding this Calabian compactifications. For instance, from this new exact sphere partition functions, we can compute the Keller potential on the Keller moduli space of the given Calabian manifold. In other words, we can compute the exact Zamolodchikov metric of this two-dimensional CFT. And from this functions, we can compute the central charge of the D-brain in this Calabian manifold. And similarly, from this exact RP2 real projective two-plane partition functions, one can compute the central charge of the oriented fold in this Calabian manifold. And the most important thing here is that all these kind of all these formulas are actually exact in alpha prime corrections, which includes all kinds of Wurzschen instanton corrections. And here, we do not need to rely on the mirror symmetry to compute those kind of observables. So these are the things what I want to discuss today. Well, actually, there's one more motivation for me to study this the exact hemisphere partition functions and RP2 partition functions, which is some possibility that conventional expression of the Ramuk-Namuk charge of this D-brain or oriented fold plane may need a certain modifications. So what is this? So let me first start with this minima couplings of the D-brains to the Ramuk-Namuk gauge field C, which is given by these sections, which is called the Festuminal couplings. And as many of you already know, there is a long, long history to find the correct form, the right form of this Ramuk-Namuk charges of the D-brains and the oriented fold planes. In particular, this anomaly inflow mechanism has been very useful to constrain the possible form of this Ramuk-Namuk charges. So let me first briefly review what this anomaly inflow mechanism is. So let's consider some DP brains. And the low energy effective theory living on these DP brains is given by maximally supersymmetric Young-Mills series. And this gauge theory contains conserved SO9-P R symmetries, where this 9-P is the dimension of the space transverse to the D brains. For some cases, like D5 or D7 brains in type 2B string theory, it is known that this SO9-P R symmetry become anomalous. Well, that's perfectly fine within the context of the field theory because this is just global symmetry, global anomaly. However, as soon as you couple those systems to the gravity or string theory, this anomalous R symmetry causes serious problems, making the theory ill-defined. This is because when you couple the theory to the gravity, this SO 9-P R symmetries become a part of the diffeomorphism, which is the local symmetries. So it's a local anomaly, local symmetry anomaly. So it's various serious problems. However, we believe that string theory must be a consistent theory. So we expect that the whole actions describing this system, which consists of three parts, which is this type 2A or B bulk string actions, and D-brain actions, and this Festuminal coupling of the D-brains, must be invariant under this SO9-P rotation. So we expect that the anomalous term, which arises from the variation of this D-brain actions, must be canceled by the variation of this Festuminal couplings. And highly constrain the possible term that may appear in this Ramuk-Namuk charge form here. So this is the key idea of the anomaly inflow argument. And people studied this anomaly inflow in many different settings, like the deep brains on top of each other, or intersecting deep brains, and so on. And I think this is a kind of short list of important references along these directions. Well, actually, this is very funny because these people proposed some expression for this Ramo-Ramo charge, but this expression turns out to be wrong. They missed something, and this guy corrected it. And later on, this expression also turns out to be wrong. So this guy fixed it, and so on and so forth. It's a very interesting history. And there are these Dirac charge quantization conditions also has been very useful to constrain the possible expressions in this Ramo-Ramo charges. So for instance, let's think about some four-dimensional particles, which can be identified as some D6 brains wrapped on some entire Calabi-Yau 3 manifold. And let me consider another four-dimensional particles, which can be also identified as some D6 brain wrapped on the same Calabi-Yau manifold. And their U1 electric and magnetic charges are determined by this Ramo-Ramo charges of the D brains. and we have to require that the Schrödinger product between these U1 charges of those four-dimensional particles must be integers. And this requirement can be nicely summarized as the following geometric formulas, where M is the D6 brain world volume, which is the Calabi-Yau 3 manifold, and FA, FB, is the world volume field strength of those D6 brain, describing the two four-dimensional particles, and R is the curvature 2 form. And we require that this quantity to be integers. This requirement also provides very strong constraint on the possible term that may appear in this Ramo-Ramo charge form. So at the end, people found that the Ramo-Ramo charges of D brains and orientable plane should be given by these expressions, which satisfy all those kinds of physical constraints. So let me first start with this central charge of the D brain, which is given by these expressions. So here, this is the first Chern character of the field strength on the world volume theory. And this is the square root of the Arup genus of the tangent bundle and Arup genus of the normal bundle, where this Arup genus is given by these expressions. So here, we first need to formally take a formal series expansion of this expression, which is given by this one, and then insert this this curvature 2 form tensor into that expression. And then let me look at this central charge of the orientable plane, which is given by these expressions. The first factor is very important for the tadpole cancellations of the orientable plane. And we have another little different characteristic class, which is called the Hilgebrook class, which is given by these expressions. And actually, from the string worksheet computations, for instance, this one-point function of the Ramo-Ramo vertex, people confirm the first few factors of those two expressions explicitly in the past. Okay. So once you fix this Ramo-Ramo charge of the D-brain and the orientable plane, it's fairly straightforward to write down the central charge or tension of this D-brain in the orientable plane, the Calabi-Yau manifold, at least in the large volume limit, which is given by these expressions, where M is the world volume of the D-brains, and B is the NSNS two-form gauge field, J is the Kähler two-form, and you just insert this Ramo-Ramo charge of the D-brain and the orientable plane. Oh, sorry. So in the case of the orientable plane, you don't have this B term. You just have this IJ term. Sorry. Well, this is well-established stories, beautiful story, and people believe that this is the end of the story. Until I heard a talk by Dave Morrison given in the string conference last year. During the talk, he mentioned that recently there are quite a many mathematicians who pointed out that this formula turns out to be wrong. And the new formula proposed by those mathematicians, including the Kuntsevich, is given by this expression. The central charge of the D-brain should be written as the following expressions, which is quite different to these expressions. For instance, this central charge formula involves a new characteristic class, which is called the gamma class, rather than the Eta genus. So here, this gamma class is defined by the usual Euler gamma functions in this way. And last year, Kentaro Hori and his collaborators confirmed this new formula of the central charge of the D-brains by computing this exact hemisphere partition functions. So it's very confusing, actually. I mean, when I look at this large volume limit, the central charge formula of the D-brain is the large volume limit, which is given by these expressions, it's likely to take this part as a new formula of the Ramanujan charge of the D-brains. And it's very strange, because the one obvious question is, we should ask the following questions. Whether or not this new expression for the Ramanujan charge of the D-brain satisfies the anomaly cancellation conditions, what I discussed in the previous slides, and whether or not this new expression satisfies the Dirac charge quantizations. And surprisingly, this new expression satisfies this anomaly cancellation and Dirac charge quantizations. It's quite surprising. However, still, there is a very serious problem if we want to identify this this expression as a new Ramanujan charge of the D-brains, because by definitions, this gamma class contains some imaginary piece. So the Ramanujan charge also contains some imaginary piece. Therefore, the vestibular coupling of the D-brain also contains some imaginary part, which obviously breaks the CPT invariance, and it doesn't make sense at all. So I was totally confused, and I don't understand what's going on there. So that's the motivations of this work, and I want to discuss today about it. For instance, I would like to see whether we need a similar modification of the central charge of the oriented fold plane or the Ramanujan charge of the oriented fold plane, and I would like to see whether we have a new characteristic class in these new formulas of the central charge of the oriented fold planes. And I want to understand the physical meaning of this new formula. So let me start with this two-spare partition functions. Any questions now? So one can show that the supersymmetric algebra on the two-sphere is given by this SU2/1 super algebra, which is a subalgebra of this 2,2 superconformal algebra. And this SU2/1 contains SU2 and U1 as a bosonic subalgebra, where SU2 is the rotational symmetry of the two spheres, and U1 is the vector U1R symmetry. And it is important to note that this axial U1R symmetry of the theory is now explicitly broken unless the given theory is conformal at the beginning. This SU2/1 supersymmetry algebra can be parameterized by these Killing spinors, epsilon and epsilon bar, which satisfy those two Killing spinor equations of the two spheres. And each of these Killing spinor equations allow two independent solutions. So we have four independent solutions in total, which will parameterize this 2,2 supersymmetry on the two spheres. So once you identify the supersymmetry algebra and the two spheres, next you have to find the field theory realization of this SU2/1 algebra. And then you need to construct the Lagrangians, supersymmetric Lagrangian on these two spheres. There are many different ways to do that. And at the end, one can show that there are only one of L corrections in the Tsuji transformation rule for the various fields in the theory. But L corrections in the supersymmetric Lagrangian and the two spheres. For instance, there is one of L corrections in the Tsuji variation rule for the gauge in the field. And there are one of L squared corrections in the kinetic term for the vector multiply. All right, so we have a supersymmetric theories on the two spheres. And we will evaluate the path integral of this theory exactly using the localization technique. So let me briefly review what this Suji localization technique is. So let me consider the following path integral, where S is the action of the theory, what we would like to understand, which is invariant under the Suji transformation generated by the supercharged Q. And the supercharged Q satisfies these relations, where J is a certain bosonic symmetry that this original action can preserve. And then we will add the following Q exact term to the actions with the parameter T. In general, this partition function is a function of this parameter T. However, when this term B that appears in this term is invariant under the bosonic symmetry J, one can show that this partition function is actually independent of the parameter T, which implies that the partition function at T equal to zero is the same as the partition function at t equal to infinities. This is very nice because on the left-hand side, we have the original theory that's fully quantum. And in general, it's very, very difficult to evaluate this path into the partition function. However, on the right-hand side, we have a different theory whose dynamics is governed by this deformed actions rather than the original actions. And in the limit where this parameter t goes to infinities, this deformed theory is in the semi-classical regime. Therefore, it's fairly easy to evaluate the path integral of this deformed theory in the semi-classical regime by performing the Gaussian integral. And at the end, one can show that the partition function of the original theory can be written as the following expressions, where phi star, the setter point, will satisfy the equation of motion of the deformed theory, not the original theory. And this setter point must be supersymmetric. And there is a classical action contributions and one determinant contribution around each of the setter points. And this is an exact answer. All right, so now let me discuss about some particular localization scheme that I use to compute the two-sphere partition functions. So here, we choose a particular supercharged Q, which satisfies these relations, where J generates some rotation of the two-sphere, having fixed point at north and south pole. And R is the vector U and R charge of the theory. And given such a choice of supercharge, we can show that the kinetic term for the vector multiplet, Cayley multiplet, and the superpotential terms are all Q exact, which implies some sort of decoupling theorem, which is the two-sphere partition functions should be independent of the gauge coupling constant. This is because the vector multiplet kinetic term is Q exact. And any parameter appears in this kinetic term in the vector multiplet shouldn't affect the final result. And this is very important to say that this two-sphere partition function of the gauge theory at UV actually compute the two-sphere partition function of the CFT at the IR fixed point. And this two-sphere partition function is also independent of the complex parameter in the superpotential W. This is because the superpotential term is also Q-exact. All right, and once you fix the supercharged Q and the Q-exact deformation, we will take this kinetic term for the chiral and vector multiplet as our Q-exact deformations. So once you choose this Q-exact deformations, then you need to work out the supersymmetric setter point and then compute the one-node determinant around the supersymmetric setter point. And at the end, this is the answer. The two-sphere partition function of this gate linear sigma model is given by these expressions. W is the bi group, the gauge group. Here, B is the quantized flux on two-sphere. C is the Fi parameter of the theory. Theta is the two-dimensional theta angle. And we have a one-node determinant contribution from the vector multiplet and the chiral multiplet, where alpha represents the positive root of the gauge group. Rho is the weight of the representation of the matter field under the gauge group. And Q is the U and R charge of the matter field. And here we have one prefactor, which depends on the cutoff scale lambda. We have to introduce this cutoff to regulate this one-node determinant. And from these prefactors, one can read up the central charge of the theory of the CFT, which is given by this formula, where the trace is performed over all the fermionic field, and R is the U on R charges of the theory. And this formula exactly agrees with what Silverstein and Witten and Hori and Tong has obtained a while ago. All right, so this is the result. And then you can naturally ask the following questions. What this S2 partition function compute in physics? The answer to this question is the following. So from this exact two-spin partition functions, you can compute the Keller potential on the Keller moduli space of the Calabi manifold. And this Keller potential is exact in all upper prime corrections, which includes all kinds of Walsh instanton corrections. And here, to compute such an exact Keller potentials, you do not need to rely on the mirror symmetries. So this formula was first conjectured by this group after working on many, many examples. And later on, this conjecture was proven by Gomez and myself. And this is the sketch of the proof. So here, essentially, what we found is that there is a supersymmetric way to squash the two spheres without changing the final result, this partition function result. And when we take the infinite squashing limit, where two sphere becomes this infinitely long cylinder-like geometries, we can identify these two sphere partition functions as an inner product between the canonical ground state of the given theory, where this canonical ground state corresponds to the identity operators. And this ground state is in, and we can show that this ground state is in the Raman sector. And it has been shown by Chakotay and Fafa long ago that this particular inner product between the canonical ground state will compute this e to the minus k, where k is the exact Keller potential of the Keller moduli space of the given Calabi-Yau manifold. So this is the end of this end of the proof. Right, so let me now move on to the supersymmetric exact hemisphere partition function of this supersymmetric A theory. We first need to construct the supersymmetric theory on the hemispheres, and this is not that difficult because we just need to start with the supersymmetric theory on the two spheres and then cut the space by half. But this is not the end of the story because we have a boundary. So we need to consider some boundary data on the boundary, which will specify the deep brains what we'd like to study. So what are those? What are these boundary data? So first, we need to impose either Neumann or Dirichlet boundary conditions on the various fields in the bulk theory. And then, in order to preserve the two supercharges on these hemispheres from the four supercharges on sphere, we need to consider some boundary interactions. First of all, we need to introduce the Chan pattern vector space on the boundary. Well, this is the string theory 101. We have to, the endpoint of the open string carries some electric charge source. And in addition to that, we also need to consider some fermionic operators, which is known as the tachyon profile, acting on this Chan pattern vector space B. And this tachyon profile has to satisfy these relations, where W is the superpotential of the bulk theory. This equation is known as the matrix factorization, and the solution to this equation is not unique. So depending on phi q, which satisfy these relations, we may have some scalar potential on the boundary, which is given by this anti-commutation relation between the tachyon profile q and its Hermitian conjugate. And this scalar potential on the boundary will describe a certain physical process, which is known as the tachyon condensation. Okay, so to be more concrete, let me try to describe this D-brain shown in this cartoon. Well, for the scalar field describing the tangential direction of this D-brain, we have to impose the Neumann boundary condition. But for the scalar field describing the normal direction of these D-brains, there are actually two options. First, we can impose the Dirichlet boundary conditions for those scalar fields describing the normal directions of the D-brains. This is very intuitive, and this is what we learn from the textbook. But sometimes this description becomes very subtle, especially when this deep brain is wrapping on some subspace where cycles in the Calabi manifold, which is not spin, but spin C manifold. This subtlety is known as the Fried-Wittner anomaly. Well, basically, on spin C manifold, it's not easy to define the fermion consistently. So you have to do one more thing, like adding some half line bond or something like that. But I won't discuss about this subtlety in more detail today, due to the lack of the time. So because of the subtleties in modern deep brain language or physics, people prefer to use the second option. So instead of imposing the Dirichlet boundary conditions, people would like to impose the Neumann boundary condition, even for the scalar field describing the normal directions, and then consider some non-trivial Tachyon profile Q. We satisfy these equations, which can lead to some boundary potential on some scalar potential on the boundary, and this scalar potential on the boundary can be minimized at the positions where this deep brain is located, which is the phi n equal to zero. In the string theory pictures, we are now imagining something like space-filling deep brains and space-filling anti-deep brains, which are unstable, so they collapse and decay into some lower dimensional deep brain, and this lower dimensional deep brain is the deep brain what we'd like to describe in this question. So we have a supersymmetric theory on the hemispheres with a certain boundary data, and then using the localization technique, we can compute the exact hemisphere partition function of those theories. So here W, which is given by these expressions. Here W is again the Weyl group. Tau is the complex phi, the Fi parameters, which is given by these expressions. And we have a contribution from the Chan pattern vector space, where rho star and r star represents the gauge charge and the vector U and r charge of the vectors in this Chan pattern vector space. It's basically gauge charge of the boundary particles. And we have one determinant contributions from the vector multiplet and the chiral multiplet, which is given by these expressions. And this is an exact result. Then one can again ask about the following questions. What this new exact hemisphere partition function compute in string theory? So in order to answer the questions, we can use a sigma. Oh, yes?
Is there a sigma of sigma?
Sigma in the what?
In the one loop factor, the sigma of sigma.
This one?
Yeah, the sigma of sigma.
It's a sigma to sigma, yeah. The same thing.
One sigma to the alpha.
Oh, sorry, alpha. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, so the question is this one, what this hemisphere partition function computing string theory? And we can use the similar idea, what I presented earlier in the Squash-Tuske story, which is the following. So there is a supersymmetric way to deform this round hemisphere to this infinitely stretched Seagull-like geometry without changing this result. And in this infinite limit, at this infinite squashing limit, one can identify this partition function as an inner product between the canonical ground state and the boundary state. And it has been shown by Ogury and his collaborator that this particular inner product will compute the central charge of the D-brains. All right, so to be more concrete, let me think about the Calabi-Yau hypersurface, the simplest example, which is the Calabi-Yau hypersurface in CPN space. The gate linear sigma model description of this Calabi-Yau hypersurface is given by this two-dimensional, So we have to consider some two-dimensional 2.2 supersymmetric gauge theory. The gauge group is U1, and this theory is coupled to n chiral multiplet carrying electric charge plus 1, and a single chiral multiplet P carrying electric charge minus 1. And we have to consider some Fi parameter and two-dimensional theta angle. And finally, we need to add to the theory the following superpotential, which is given by P times a homogeneous polynomial of x of degree n. So in the case of n equal 5, this Calabi-Yau hypersurface in CPN will describe the famous quintic 3-manifold. Okay. So let us compute the central charge of these D-rings in this Calabi-Yau manifold. First, we will consider some D-ring wrapping the entire Calabi-Yau space. In this case, we don't have any non-trivial tachyon profile. And using this exact formula, one can compute the exact central charge of such space-filling D-ring, which is given by these expressions. This is the integration contour. And since we are interested in the geometric phase of the gauge theory, we will set Fi parameter positive so that we can close this contour to the left. And we can evaluate this integral by some of the residue at these poles, non-positive integers. And here we can identify that negative integers will correspond to the Wershad instanton corrections. This is because they always contain this e to the 2 pi c, or some power of it, which is the instanton factor. And we can identify the residue at the origin at the perturbative contribution to the central charge. And in the large volume limit of the Calabi-Yau space, where this Fi parameter goes to infinities, we can suppress the Wershad instanton corrections that arises from this residue at these negative integers. And using these toric divisors of the CPN space satisfying these relations, one can rewrite this expression in this limit as the following geometric formulas. So this is the central charge formula of this space-filling D-rings. And as you can see, indeed, we have a gamma class rather than a roof genus. We can do a similar computation for lower dimensional D-ring in the Calabi-Yau manifold. Oh, there's one thing I missed to say. So here, from this preserved the two supercharges on hemispheres, one can argue that these D-rings are of type B, by which I mean these D-rings are wrapped in the holomorphic cycles in the Calabi-Yau manifold. Sorry. Anyway. So we will compute the central charge of these lower dimensional D-rings, and all we need to take into account here is to add right tachyon profile, which will give us the right boundary scalar potentials to describe this lower dimensional D-ring. And using these exact formulas, one can compute the central charge in the large volume limit, which is given by these expressions. And again, instead of this ratio of the radio of genus, we obtain the ratio of the gamma class. So this computation somehow confirms this new formula proposed by the mathematicians. And I was totally confused. And when you don't know what's going on here, the only thing you can do is accumulate more and more data and see the patterns. So that's the reason why I want to look at this RP2 partition functions. So we first need to construct the supersymmetric theory on real projective plane, two planes. This is not difficult again. You just start with the supersymmetric theory on the two spheres and then impose some parity projection condition on the various fields in the theory, where this parity will identify the point on the two sphere to its antipodal point. Here, we choose the following two supercharges from the four supercharges on the spheres, which satisfy these properties under the parity actions. And then we will impose this parity projection condition for the scalar field, describing the tangential direction of the orientable planes. And we will impose this parity projection conditions for scalar field, describing this normal direction of the orientable planes. And using this conserved supercharges on RP2, we can unambiguously fix the parity projection conditions for the rest of the field in the theory, like a Fermionic theories. It is important to note that the two-dimensional theta angle on this real projective two-plane is allowed to have pi value only. This is because otherwise, the topological term, like a theta F12 term, will break the parity symmetries. And this zero or pi value of the theta angles will distinguish two different types of the orientable plane, which is O plus and O minus plane. So we have a supersymmetric theory on this real projective two-plane. And using the localization technique, we can again compute the exact RP2 partition function of the gate two-dimensional gate theory, which is given by these expressions. The one difference as compared to the two-sphere partition function is that here we have two different types of set of points, one of which is called the even holonomy, and the other is called the odd holonomy. This is because on the real projected two planes, we can have a discrete holonomy along the non-contractible cycles in this RP2 plane. Well, anyway, this is the result. W is again the Weyl group, C is FI parameters, and we have a bunch of one-node determinant around each of those set of points, which is given by these expressions. And the relative sign between those two one-node determinant is determined by the value of the theta angle, like 0 or pi. All right, so this is an exact answer result. Then you can then we can use the similar argument what I presented earlier for hemisphere partition function or squash two-sphere partition function, which is we can identify that this RP2 partition functions can be identified as inner product between the canonical ground state and the cross-gap state of this series. And again, in this particular inner product, we'll compute the central charge of the oriented fold plane in the Calabi-Yau space. And this formula is exact in all kinds of alpha prime corrections, and we do not need to rely on the mirror symmetry at all. Okay, so let me work out the example. This Calabi-Yau hypersurface in the CPM model. So let me start with the oriented fold plane wrapping the entire Calabi-Yau space, and using that formula, this is the central charge of this oriented fold plane, which is given by these expressions. And when you consider some geometric phase of the given theory and take some large volume limit of the Calabi-Yau manifold, at the end, you can obtain this geometric formula of the central charge of the oriented fold plane. And as you can see, instead of this Hilgebert class, you obtain the gamma class. You can do a similar computation for lower dimensional oriented fold plane in the Calabi-Yau space by imposing some different parity projection condition in the scalar field. Then the central charge of the oriented fold plane, this lower dimensional oriented fold plane, is given by these expressions. We can reproduce this e to the p minus 4 vector, which is very important for the tetrapod cancellations properly. However, instead of this ratio of the Hilgebert class, we obtain something different, which involves this gamma class. So again, this conventional expression of the central charge of the oriented fold plane needs to be modified. But again, it's quite confusing. So I think it's quite early. I think it's now ready to discuss how to understand this new formula for the central charge of the D-brains and oriented fold planes. And what's the physics behind this modification? So in order to do that, we first need to understand how much this new expression is different from the old expressions. So let me first start with the central charge of the D-brain, which is given by these expressions. And using the identity of the gamma class, which satisfies these relations, we can easily factor out the conventional expression of the central charge of the D-brains. And this is the deviation factor. Yes?
There is a simple way to obtain the OP answer from the D-brain answer by doing some non-integrand.
Say that again, sorry. I don't understand the question.
Like you said, that there is a discrete symmetry on there to identify the opposite point. But after you computed the metric integral, is there any simple procedure then?
Oh, you mean from the two-sphere partition function? Sort of, yes. Because, I mean, two-sphere partition function can be written as holomorphic piece and anti-holomorphic part. Holomorphic part comes from the north pole contributions, and the anti-holomorphic part comes from the south pole contributions. On RP2, we have to identify those two factors, right? Which means we have to identify vortex instantons and anti-vortex instanton contributions. Therefore, we need to set, somehow we can rewrite two-step partition functions into the following way. There's a summation of the Suzy vacua in the Higgs branch. There's a vortex contributions, anti-vortex contributions, vectorized form. On RP2, we have basically can be written in this way. The same sum, the sum of the Suzy vacua in the Higgs branch, same factor, vortex partition functions, but the argument is not complex, but this one. So this plus and minus determined by the value of the theta angle, 0 or pi. But in zero case, we have plus. In the case of pi value, we have minus sign. But that's all.
No, I said, but I mean, can it help to that extent on what they're both
paired? That I don't know. Yeah. Because, I mean, this is an exact answer for which contains all kinds of Washington instantons. Here, this formula is valid in the large volume limit, which suppresses all kinds of Washington instantons. So maybe from here, you first need to suppress all kinds of Washington instantons, then think about the formula. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's the easy way to understand this. Where are we? Okay. So let me consider the central charge of the orientable plane, which is given by these expressions. And using this identity between the Adriff genus and the Hilgebert class, you can easily factor out this conventional form of the central charge of these orientable planes. And surprisingly, you obtain the same deviation factors compared to this D-brain case. So let me take a closer look at these deviation factors, which can be nicely summarized into the following form on the right-hand side. The first, all terms that appear in this exponent is purely imaginary. This is very important. And in the case of the Calabi-Yau manifold, the first term just vanished, and this correction term from gamma class appears from the sixth form, the third degree of Chan characters. So in order to see the difference from this gamma class, you first need a D6 frame probe in this Calabi-Yau manifold. And this is the reason why people didn't capture this modification in the past by doing some string worship computation, because they confirm up to four-form contributions in the center Ramon-Ramon charge of the center Ramon-Ramon charge or central charge of this D-brain. And second, this deviation terms or all terms in the exponent actually depends on the target space itself, the Calabi-Yau space X, rather than the self manifold or holomorphic cycles that this D-brain and oriented fold is wrapping on. Which means these corrections shouldn't be related to the D-brain or oriented fold plane physics. It just cares about the target space itself. Finally, when you look at these two expressions, you can find one more common factors, which is e to the minus ij. And this exponent is, again, purely imaginary. So, based on those observations, I strongly suspect that the correction from the gamma class should be understood as the alpha prime correction to the volume of the Calabi-Yau space, which is in this way, rather than the shift of the Ramon-Ramon charge of the D-brains or orientable planes. Indeed, we have one more evidence that supports this claim, which is the two-sphere partition functions. So from this exact two-sphere partition function, we can take the large volume limit. And in this limit, the two-sphere partition function can be written as the following form. Again, you can see that this universal factor here. And it's quite natural to think this correction from the gamma class as our alpha prime corrections for this e to the minus ij again. Right? And furthermore, in the case of, furthermore, well, as I presented earlier, these two-sphere partition functions we'll compute the exact Keller potential K on the Keller moduli space of the Calabi manifold. In 80s, in the case of the Calabi 3, this exact Keller potential in the case of the Calabi 3 manifold can be expanded in the following way. The first term is nothing but the classical volume of the Calabi manifold, Calabi 3. And there's a second term which involved the Euler characteristic of the Calabi manifold, which was computed in the nonlinear sigma model on the target, whose target space is this Calabi manifold. This computation was done in the 80s. And you can obviously find that this term will compute this classical part of the Calabi manifold volume. And this gamma class will be account for this full loop corrections in this the full loop corrections in the nonlinear sigma model to the quantum volume, to the volume of the Calabi manifold. For instance, you can see this zeta of 3 here, and this one will correspond to the Euler characteristic of the Calabi manifold. So these observations also support our claim. So in summary, we strongly suspect that this modification from the gamma class should be attributed to the quantum volume of the Calabi manifold rather than the shift of the Raoult-Rambert charges. And it's perfectly safe to use to use the conventional form of the Raoult-Rambert charge that we used for last more than 10 years. So it's safe to use that one. And I'd like to make one more comment. So this formula is valid in any higher dimensional Calabi space. And from this gamma class, you can predict some perturbative correction to the Calabi volume of the Calabi manifold. So it will be interesting to see whether this is the true or this is the case from direct computation in the nonlinear sigma models whose target space is this higher dimensional Calabi manifold. Right, so let me summarize. Today we compute the exact two-spirit partition functions, hemispirit partition functions, and RP2 partition function of the gate theory, from which we can compute the exact Keller metric on the Keller moduli space of the Calabi manifold, and exact central charge of the D-brain and orientable plane wrapped on some holomorphic cycles in the Calabi manifold. And from these computations, we confirm the new formula of the central charge proposed by mathematicians, which involves the gamma class. And we suspect that this correction term from the gamma class should be understood as a quantum alpha prime correction to the volume of the Calabi manifold. And we didn't discuss about this issue today, but anyway, from this exact hemisphere partition functions, we can reproduce as very solid vectors in the Raoult-Rambert charges of the D-brains, which is associated to the spin C manifold. This formula was first proposed by Minasian and Moore, and this exact hemisphere partition function can reproduce that. And all these computations are consistent to Uribe-Fafa mirror symmetries. So that's all what I want to say today, and thank you for your attention. Thank you. Chris?
So when you talk about alpha prime corrections,
you mean all alpha prime corrections? No, in this case, the perturbative correction. Leading with us. Alpha prime, yeah. I mean, this gamma class compute the perturbative corrections, and from this exact hemisphere partition function, you can compute all kinds of Wolfson instanton correction too. The perturbative, yeah.
Okay. So perturbative, you mean whether or not the green
sign. Yeah.
Other questions? So all these things are, this is just within perturbation theory, correct?
These computations using localizing technique exact. Even in this, Wolfson instanton correction.
So if I dug in, this is probably I'm just going to think ahead of line. The orientables are non-perturbatively unstable. And when you go to non-zero string coupling and all that space on back reaction, It looked to me like you didn't say anything that depended on that. Is that true or not true?
Which doesn't depend on what, sorry?
Nothing that you said, I mean, it looks like that depends on
what?
That statement. That if I tell you, in fact, these oriented folks don't make sense in full strength, they only in certain perturbations.
No. No.
Would that contradict anything that you said or no?
So this expression exact in the non-perturbative sense, maybe different one, this one, or this one. It's exact in.
It's not from here. It's just two dimensional.
Yeah.
Is that this two dimensional here? It's not from here. So is that exact statement two dimensional here? Is it
string
worship? It's a string worship, and could compute all worship instant correction.
Sure. Yeah. No G string
at all here. There's no G string coupling, G coupling, GS coupling dependency. Yeah. We compute the leading order of GS. Yeah. Yeah, it's because we compute basically two sphere and hemisphere and RPT only, not the torus and higher genus. Thank you.